Actually, now we have also a little connection to the film that we saw in the beginning, because he was referring there to Pasolini in the second part, and that was when Pasolini was still alive, and he was already then describing him as a masochist, and
And we also filmed quite close to the Spanish Steps.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is very safe area now.
Now we have like lots of responses on the question of the response, but they also have very specific content that cannot be generalized by such an abstraction. So due to the fact that we do not have very much time left, I would propose to first ask if someone on the panel wants to comment on the previous or the other comments and presentations. Is there any one of you?
I'm thinking about everything that we've just absorbed, imbibed, including the film. And I guess, yeah, it's an interesting prompt, and then to come back to cinema with this. But I guess I had a question relating to the first part of the film, because I'm curious about that. So who is the model who's being referred to? What's the name of the model?
Daniele Luna.
Oh, okay. And so, yeah, no, I'm just still thinking about all of this. I mean, it's really like very dense what we've just absorbed, but a lot of very interesting points that made me wonder even further. I mean, Francisco Varela, for example, thinking about that, and yeah, no, I'm all of it, actually, you know, from the visceral aspects to the cinematic parts. But I was just wondering, I don't know, I have a lot of thoughts about it, and we don't have enough time to go into these kinds of things in depth, but I'm curious about, I mean, there's one thing that we haven't really talked about in the project is kind of the positioning of Fichte in relationship to history. I mean, it was touched upon in terms of Chile, the questions about the kinds of selections that he made in terms of what he focused on. But I guess watching the film, it made me think about, well, it's 1964, and in terms of the kinds of things that might have been attractive to him or to others also coming from I mean, his background, as we have established, is complex, but it also is in relation to others and to histories. And so I guess it's just sort of, no, it's compelling to think about, to think further about that. What would have been the attractions for all of that, the kind of stories, the sort of ways in which that was composed?
Anyone? Okay. I mean, of course, in many of the contributions, historical moments were pointed at, and the question of what happened afterwards, what would have happened if he would have stayed, what were the comparisons between the different states of places in different historical moments, and of course. What has not been mentioned, and what was also not the theme, is like the historical origin of some of the problems, desires, and interests that Fichte developed. Who was like a Jewish child who had to be hidden from the Nazis before 45 by his mother in an orphanage in Bavaria, who then also experienced parts of the party, the bombing of Hamburg. And so, I mean, these kind of historical moments, then the kind of post-fascist homophobic Federal Republic of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, before it then finally left it, more or less, are, of course, part of a historical genealogy that that can be traced back in a lot of the motives that reappear. But then also for him, his own thinking, historical thinking, had an aspect of, I don't know, eschatology or millenarism, because this idea of the gayification of the world, of this kind of huge coming together of all parts of the world in some kind of homosexual or sexual in general encounter, would have been some kind of permanent of an the big solution, the big glorious coming together of everything. And that is not that's not really kind of a historical category or historical concept. It's kind of a end of history concept, in a first utopian and then, after encountering the AIDS crisis, a dystopian way, in which it was like the end of the world. And but on the other hand, he had this kind of sympathies for pragmatic social democratic politicians like Salvador Allende, who was very much part of a school of thought that was thinking in historical categories.
It's a long answer to that. I mean, I would say that also it's kind of periodized this kind of fascination as well. I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at, by just in terms of looking at the film in 1964, the kinds of things that are focused upon the choices, all the choices that make the texture of what it is. That's something really specific. And I guess I'm just saying that also, even that kind of wish, also all the sorts of things, like even Cristobal was alluding to in his presentation, which I found interesting, of listing all of these various kinds of period kinds of figures, whether they were had to do with from afar, reading about Cologne and all the lists that you gave in the 80s, I guess thinking about, okay, what, in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, like there's always a kind of sort of idea of what might be the ideals, but then they also have their very specific inflections. And so I'm sort of, this is just like an open question, it's just a question, it's nothing that I imagine we're gonna come to a conclusion, but it just makes me think about that.
I mean, if there are there any other statements on?
Yeah. One thing to ask related to what you're saying, because what I was mentioning is like when you try to understand somebody else, the effort makes you embody it somewhat. You know, like if you're just studying something, you just read it and you learn a little bit. But when you really, really try to grasp to the information, try to understand somebody else's position, you embody it to a certain extent. And this is a question I had even before I wanted to ask both of the curators. If during the process of making this show, did you want to feel like the audience would be embodied through the pieces? Did you change while making the show? I know this sounds super cheesy, but it's kind of like there's an ethical connection or an ethical force in Fichte's work that is about like, well, who are you in this position? And I understand the logic of a curator producing, and that was the first thing you talked about, why are you putting up art pieces? Because art pieces have a specific kind of address to an audience that asks for a multiplicity of subjective positions, right? But as I'm interested in your position as curators through the whole process, if it has changed by being involved in this project, has it changed the way you see yourselves as curators? And yeah, that's pretty much the question.
There's several. I need to try to make it short, so there's also space for a broader discussion. But I think the reason even to, I mean, this slightly odd idea to do an exhibition about, or starting from the reception of a writer's project, which, you know, never totally adds up. I mean, just because it like remains in all levels, these different levels of referentiality never come together. There's depending on what you have might have just read outside of the exhibition last night, or within which page of a book that you can open in there, like all these textures will always be sort of on the move, no, and relatively unstable. But I mean, the whole thing is that it's really about also an aesthetics of self-implication, and using that figure and the problem of aboutness and the problem of that particular not having been accessible to a readership of a place, etc. This was, you know, for just also like a little like an engine, a hinge that we introduced into, like, you know, problematizing self-implication and institutional implication as well. No? So, and it's very much, in a way, you know, what Michelle, in a kind of speaking about her own implication and her own response, phrased very powerfully and you know, direct in terms of the fragmentary nature, the incoherent nature, the broken nature of subjectivity in the wake of colonialism. Only that, of course, on the European side, on the side of settler colonial societies, there is always this claim for a coherence. And it's somehow, you know, of the subject that reconstitutes itself as. So we wanted to make that thematic by speaking about Fichte, no? and by sort of more not doing justice to him, which Shaw can't do. That's left to individual readers because that's the medium of the book. But to this mess of what an exhibition like that is in terms of, you know, its intermedial character, its complete. You know, strange tapestry of different sign regimes, which I know is of course also really hard work for an audience that you then have to somehow guide along other lines of affect, correspondences, analogies, just such as you know, such as the ones you drew yourself, along which you jump onto from one reference to another, but you also, once you feel stable, you are being pulled, the carpet is pulled again under your very feet. So maybe that is not a very coherent answer, but I probably, I mean, one last thing. I think it's important to, you know, one of the writers for the book, Erhard Schüttpert, suggests something through the Marxist anthropologist and historian Sidney Mintz that I found quite profound. That in my own, because you asked for our own being changed, and so like that was the kind of insight or epiphany that I had also intuited and hadn't been able to put words to, or didn't have the instruments quite at hand, which is, in, you know, in all that he was looking for, except the sexual encounters, etc., in terms of what he was looking for, that might be described or mistaken for a kind of archaic dimension in the Afro-diasporic culture, and what he described sort of as the computer of the Afro-diasporic soul, psyche, that rather than looking for this sort of what might be misunderstood in archaeological metaphor as an archaic layer that had sustained itself, that had become the engine of an incredible modern counter-canon of survival, of creativity, of cosmological reassurance. But instead of him looking actually for that, he might just as well, or might have been looking for understanding his own post-war modernization as a subject mediated as it was through the cultural techniques of the Caribbean. This is what Erhard Schüttpelz describes, yeah? Like taking the Caribbean sort of, and it's the syncretic culture and the particular powers of this syncretism that Fichte was so powerful, so interested in, that he thought of as so powerful. The power might have not been the archaic fiction, the fiction of an archaic layer in there, but instead understanding sort of the self-positioning that is of how post-war Europe has been changed, mediated by the becoming global of certain elements. For instance, like in the 50s, other historians have described the 50s were also the decade and the ensuing decades of global pop culture that turned Yoruba religion into a world religion. Because there's literally no culture anymore that is not profoundly changed by techniques that have gone through this journey that Fichte in a way traces. No? So I don't want to make this into another story for self-recognition of white men, but I thought that has something else in this. This change of perspective is not only about self-recognition, because that kind of self-recognition is not about reconstituting itself as whole, but rather about recognizing one's own fragmentedness, one's own incoherence, one's own living as an embodied colonial legacy. Sorry, that was long.
No, that maybe to add just, this project had a lot to do with letting things happen, losing control, not controlling, but of course that had to be controlled, and that was also the psychological problem for probably several people involved in it. I would, and so that has altered me to answer that question. But also, I'd like to, if there's no more comments from here, I'd like to also ask if there are, comments from the audience. Questions? Yes, please. There is a microphone for you.
Thank you. I just have I don't know if it's a stupid or just a very simple question, but I was wondering, how did Fichte come up? Like, especially, specifically, Hubert Fichte?
That's a question for the two of us, I guess, or is it? Well, actually, we have offered some stories here and there how that happened, but. So this now kind of mythologized dialogue that we once had, René and I, 25 years ago, then other encounters, and so a series of chants, and then when Anselm and I finally turned it into a global project, there was no other candidate, or it was a way to get ideas together in a, let's say, in a simplified way, because the interface of a persona, of a historical persona, of an author, is still easier to communicate than to say, let's make a project on a lot of interrelated but each of them difficult questions concerning global relations, literature, and visual arts. That would not have been, would not have been communicable. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. I don't know if it connects to the kind of like historicization that you were talking about, René Green. But in the case of Brazil, it was very relevant to understand that when Fichte was visiting Brazil, it was military dictatorship. So it's a very specific context. And for us working in Brazil at that moment, now, is to understand that there is a historical constellation of violence. Brazil was always a colonial violent invention, but there are moments where this violence is intensified. When Fichte was in Brazil, it was super intensified. And nowadays, we're seeing the same thing. So for us, it was super relevant to understand that Fichte was a possibility to talk about this structural violence. No? And it's, I think it's fundamental to think about this racial violence, the question of class, the whole thing of colonialism, that it's being reenacted and reenacted and reenacted. So for us, more than why Fichte, the relevance of Fichte is this possibility, but by through him, talking about these topics. And I think it's not only, I mean, like the military dictatorship in Brazil was 64, no? And then you have a whole wave of military dictatorships in South America. But also you have this connected to North American imperialism, and you have the colonial wars in Africa. So there's a lot of historical context to be unfolded related to when Fichte was traveling, when he was writing, and what we're doing now.
Right, yeah, that I'm aware of. But my question had more to do with, I think it's related to the question that came up, why Fichte? Because I think that, you know, I think that as we're talking, some of these interests of why Fichte in particular, because many people had never heard of Fichte, from the various other places. And also, I mean, in the moment that he arrived in various locations, his relationship to those places may have, I mean, it didn't make a dent, I mean, necessarily. Maybe in retrospect, it's possible to look at it. Or, I mean, because also this project, is, I mean, one of the things that was interesting from when Dietrich had mentioned it, mentioned these writings to me a long time ago, they're all in German, for one thing. And that was sort of like, okay, there's a person from Hamburg who was traveling all around the world to the African diasporic locations, investigating various things on his own with Leonor Mao, you know, taking photos or whatever. So this is like on this certain kind of plane of exploration and travel. Yet, in the various locations, I mean, part of what I was curious about with the project, and I think it's still a question, because I'd like to read the various publications that came out in the various languages that they exist in now. I've read most of the English one that takes place in New York called The Black City, and it's takes place, and I mean, this is written about in my piece in my work, 1978 to 1980s, same time. I was also living there, and so it makes me wonder about a lot of things. And then I also knew a lot of the people who are mentioned, or I was familiar with the people who are mentioned. And there's one, I mean, I haven't had time to really read the book, I just got it yesterday, 2 days ago, see the show. But I mean, in terms of, there's some very interesting questions that come up in terms of wondering about specific locations and people and intersections in terms of Fichte. Michael Chisholm, he's one of the people who Dietrich had mentioned when we were talking about this a long time ago, and I had gotten in contact with him. He's still alive. He's still alive, right?
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, it's very interesting what, in a local situation, all of these various things that you're raising about, the say, the violence, or the circulation, or the specific things that are taking place politically in the place, what is it that is possible to be picked up, you know? How would it Fichte pick up, you know, in New York in 1978? It was sort of, I mean, this is a huge question for me in terms of how invested to get with Fichte. It's sort of like, okay, fine, you know, interesting person moving through, making some observations randomly, I would say almost. It's not that there has to be a methodology that's recognizable, but at the same time, in terms of certain kinds of intensity or focus or resources devoted to, you know, whatever, it's a question. It's kind of like, okay, well, why him? That's a question.
From the audience, there are two questions there and there. I don't know which one.
Muss man davon ausgehen, dass Hubert Fichte das auch erkannt hätte, wenn er länger gelebt hätte, dass seine Werke nicht zu den Betroffenen nicht durchgedrungen sind, rein sprachlich? Oder hat er das schon angedacht gehabt? Mich gibt es anscheinend so einen Aufsatz über eine neue ethnologische Sicht auf den Menschen aus den 70er Jahren. Da weiß ich nicht genau, ob das da drin enthalten ist.
Trying to translate this. Thank you. If Hubert Fichte, if he would have lived longer, would have recognized or acknowledged that his work did not go through to the people he was talking about, and I think he, there are two, I think one, there are two answers one can give. One is that he's like he wrote about it, was very even jealous of the fact that Leonor Romau had a show that was organized by the Black Emergency Cultural Coalition in Harlem in 1980, that was called Shango, and that was very well received, and her work was acknowledged. So he thought, that is something that I've never achieved. People I have talking about can have like really responded the way that people respond to that show of photographs. There. That's the one thing. The other thing is that his criticism of ethnology, of structuralist ethnology, was always strongly referring to the fact that the structuralism would like get rid of the semantics because the structuralist ethnographers would not be able to understand the languages of the people they were writing about. And so he dug out this kind of weird German missionary from 1900, who had once, Jakob Spiet is his name, who had once done a project in Togo where he, in between 1896 and 1900, where he had met people, Ewe people, and talked to them and written about them and then translated into their language and then checked with them how correct his descriptions were. And he thought that would be a kind of project. But that's something that he's never done. And then the last, and something I wanted to say about also the why Fichte question, that's maybe kind of self-critical of us there, is that, I mean, you can observe in the art world in recent years very often this, what I call the grandfather or grandmother syndrome, where people finding themselves in the cul-de-sac of an art market dominated commercialized art world where there's no more way to be radical, that you discover some kind of radical artist that is in the age or the generation of your grandparents, and you dug out this character and you still see some kind of way out of the totally commercially dominated art world. Maybe that's also this kind of syndrome. And then there was another question over there.
Hi. I'm not a Hubert Fichte expert, but I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit still on this notion of the gay utopia and the political implications of the hypersensitivity that he's talking about. I'm asking this on the background that, for example, if you look at a very contemporary, right now situation out of cultural practice and activism, I'm living right now in Warsaw where, as you probably know, there's this right-wing nationalist government, which actually was just re-elected this Sunday. And in the last election, they targeted refugees as the enemy number one. And for this election period, it was LGBT plus movement. And in the course of this whole, all these last years, there is a very intense new queer practice rising in Poland, which is super interesting. And there is kind of a from these very young artists and activists, there is a kind of new search for a queer utopia. This is actually getting formulated right now. And it's formulated right out of the belly of the beast, really, politically speaking. And so it's maybe like one could maybe say, Juliane, a melancholically driven creativity that comes out of this, you know, it's in the vein under the big shadow of this political situation, and it's a very interesting what's happening there right now. So I was just wondering, really witnessing very closely this very interesting situation that happens there right now among these artists, how it could be related to this concept of Fichte, of the gay utopia and the hypersensitivity, the political implications of the hypersensitivity.
I don't feel like I'm absolutely entitled or the right person to answer it like one to one. I mean, there is, for instance, I think in terms of contributors to the project and people whose work we have also drawn on, there is an important text in the book, in the catalog by Dirk Link, and who's describing this kind of programmatic stance within particularly you know, a post-war, post-fascist, post-Nazi German society, wherein the program Fichte has developed is described by Dirk Link basically against you know, as kind of a programmatic stance of impurity against the fictions of substances and purification, and the kind of border fortifying measures by which such fictions produce certain forms of heteronormative subjectivities. I'd sort of, you know, refer to that, and there's obvious, so many obvious links to struggles today, and to the political, the sociology of homophobia, that I don't feel that this needs to be spelled out. But there's, you know, also shifts in linguistic register, in what where it sometimes becomes not easy to refer to Fichte as you know, a kind of forerunner or pioneer or so. Like, that's also that there are also serious problems with that. Not only though. There's another dimension that I wanted to bring up that might have to do also with the question of this, like why Fichte and the historical context question, the historical moment question. I mean, like this is more like on the level of the exhibition program here. There's a reason why Fichte, is basically to do. Like, I'm just sketching it out very, very briefly, in relation to two other exhibitions. One was called Neolithic Childhood, and that was sort of departing from the writings of Carl Einstein that Tom Hollard and myself organized here 2 years ago. And part of the reason for doing that exhibition in the context of a larger set of diverse projects dealing with canonization questions, and which, you know, how can an institution with a name like that engage in flipping scripts, in altering narratives, and in a way that produces a sustained crisis and that is not an alibi? And okay, this is maybe not this project is not about producing a sustained crisis, but about registering it in the relationship to a show like Neolithic Childhood. It was very important to, and a second show that I have to mention very briefly, called Parapolitics, Cultural Freedom and the Cold War. There was a kind of genealogy or a hypothesis laid out that was really about the the fate of the modernist avant-garde and in the Neolithic childhood exhibition in particular, you know, trying to understand yet again and anew and why it was so, why there was such a necessity for these modernists to engage in a dialogue, for instance, with ethnology and with anthropological art histories. With it was also a necessity that was basically coming out of a struggle with what art was becoming at that very moment. And these dimensions that have to do with, you know, both the institution of art as a bourgeois value form and with the forms of subjectivity attached to it, with the question of how art becomes a collective force, to simplify very radically, these dimensions of the early 20th century have in a way been frozen or pacified or funneled into something completely problematic and neutralized in this post-war modernism, where in the German sense modernism became classic, no? It became an antiquity. So Fichte is in one of the strange figures who draw on these concerns of the pre-war avant-gardes. This is why he's interested in morals, this is why he's interested in the psychiatric practices, in anti-psychiatry, in trance, in possession, because he knows that there is something about both the form of subjectivity, about collectivity, about undoing interiority, undoing the fortifying measures that have built up bourgeois subjectivity, and about the very form of art, the institutional form of art and its value forms. So Fichte is a figure through which one can build a continuity that has otherwise been broken by, you know, formalist genealogies and what you have. No? So that is also one of the reasons why Fichte.
More questions? We'll give you, well, we are anyway already behind the time frame, no? So we're already in the next historical period. Then we call it a day, huh? And we see you all tomorrow at 2 o'clock with the next surprising Hubert Fichte movie, and then three panels, quite interesting ones. See you all tomorrow.
Thank you.